Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of one reality that lie below the surface.
Oh, yeah. Let's rebel against an alien invasion today.
Am I going to get hurt? Because I don't think I want to do that.
That's possible. Because sometimes you got to put it out there, right?
Maybe. I mean, I don't want to do the wrong thing. But, you know, if it's that or a bullet, I might do it.
Maybe so. This book is fascinating. It's Scum of the Earth by Alexander Kane, right? K-A-N-E?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Alexander C. Kane. We can't forget the C.
Yes.
And it was, I think I sent you a note and I said, this is really funny.
Yeah.
And then
it got
less funny. I would say the last half to two thirds of the book, it's like, you know how MASH was funny, but not funny?
Yeah.
Kind of like that.
It was making a point.
Yes. Yeah. And it was very good. I did enjoy it a lot. So
I'm glad.
Thanks again for it. But it was really good.
Well, this author is one that I discovered through Audible when his first book came out, which was Andrea Vernon and the Corporation for Ultrahuman Protection, CUP.
Okay.
So ultrahumans are superheroes, and she works in HR at a big corporation, and the way it's set up is that big corporations have bids that they do for with countries, counties, cities to protect them from supervillains. And so they hire superheroes to do this work. And then, of course, you need human resources. And that's Andrea Vernon's job. And it was only available in audio form, which was amazing. Bonnie Turpin read it, and she is just so good. So if you listen, definitely listen. And then eventually it came out on the Kindle, which I was very excited about because I was like, I can't always listen to this. But sometimes you just need something light, and it's very light, very fun, really good plot, all that stuff. So that was eventually there were three books. Then he did one, it might be called Orlando People. And that was two books about a similar situation of people developing superhero type abilities. I didn't like that as much, but it was the same thing. Extremely funny, light, all that stuff. And then Dragon Heist, again, very funny. Always with, you know, the underdog who doesn't fit in. And then this is where they find themselves, but light. And this book came out, and I have loved all his books.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
This book came out, and I was like, I put off reading it for a couple of years because, you know, I mean, the description is Ezra Barker is a traitor. When the Merg invaded Earth, he didn't fight or even hide. He cooperated, helping them as they seized control of the planet and began their pillaging of its resources. While others toil away in mines and quarries, Ezra works an office job, helping his boss, the senator, rule over the swath of territory given to her by the Merg. And the thing is that I just thought, this just seems really serious. I cannot handle the idea of this person is the hero of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And because the subtitle of Scum of the Earth is, they won, I joined them. And I was like, and people were saying, wow, this is darker than his usual stuff. And I finally couldn't stand it. I had to see what it was like. And I was so surprised because I had relatively recently reread 1984.
Ooh, interesting.
And I suddenly thought, right?
Mm-hmm.
Double think, all that.
All that.
And I thought, oh, I think Alexander C. Kane read 1984 and then kind of wrote his own book about it.
Yeah.
Which
I think
means,
you may be right. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, it's been so long since I've read 1984, but interesting.
It's not in depth, you know, but I mean, there's plenty of elements there. It's showing how all these people think and handle things and their allegiance to or against different stuff and how they justify it, and the way life is talked about, the stringent requirements by the people who are running things, all this stuff. I just was like, I didn't know somebody who had such a comic bent could take 1984 and look at it in a different way, but I think he did.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I like that observation very much. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then I got interested in talking about it just because I enjoy it so much.
That's good, yeah, and I enjoyed it too. It was really something. But yeah, there were laugh out loud moments, and and this guy Ezra Barker is a real piece of work. So yeah, I mean the stuff that he did, and the senator.
Oh
yeah, there's really yeah, yeah, and then the guy Hayes, you know, mm-hmm. Sergeant Hayes. I think those are the three we spend the most time with, and they're all collaborators. In like different ways.
In different ways.
Yeah.
Also, I would say though, one other person we see other people. One other person who becomes a major character who we see a lot of is Arkansas.
Yes. Yep.
And she's not a collaborator. She's on the other side, but she's not a freedom fighter in the way that you generally think of freedom fighters being motivated and everything. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So she's very different from some of the other people who we understand better.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked her a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're meant to. And we yes. do. The surprising thing was that I also wound up liking Ezra and empathizing with him.
Mm.
And I really also liked the senator. I mean... You can't really like the senator, but I could really appreciate the senator, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's interesting on Ezra. It's like, you know, this can't help but make you think thoughts like, how could they do that? You know, what are they thinking? How could they possibly be collaborators, you know?
Okay, so yeah, let's get the real basic premise we already know. The Merc came in. Mm-hmm. And conquered the Earth in a very short time period. They're very different from humans. They're kind of insectoid.
Yeah, kind of a hive thing going on.
Yeah, they communicate with clicks. They don't have a lot of common understanding of things that motivate humans. And so, you know, the human moral sense is not there with them because they're just thinking in the way they think. And they apply that to everything.
Mm-hmm.
They're not trying to empathize or understand anyone but themselves. And they're taking all the resources while at the same time telling everybody, this is going to make your life better. We're going to leave you with amazing technology after we've taken every resource out of the earth. And people use this in different ways to themselves to think about it. And so basically, when they invaded... The senator was at work in her office. The Merc came whipping in, and she's extremely good at grabbing the moment, seizing the day, so to speak, and spinning a story that captures attention that she can then use to her advantage. And with the Merc, she's like, but I'm so important. I'll help you run things. And they stopped and listened to her, and then they were going to go into her aide's office. And Ezra's the one who really does all her work. He signs papers. He makes all her decisions. Right. He does everything for her because he really understands politics. He's really good at it. And so he does the practical stuff. And she's like, oh, nothing can happen to him because I won't be able to do anything.
Yeah.
And so she goes, he's also integral. Without him, we can't rule the planet. And they, okay. So he's kind of swept up in it. And the difference between him and the senator is that the senator kind of just, she does doublethink, and they have great examples of it, and she kind of does it to herself also. So she both understands what she's doing at the same time as she's justifying it to herself.
Mm.
Ezra, on the other hand, is fairly weak and kind of a coward, and he knows what he's doing, and he feels bad about it, but he still does it, and because he thinks the senator is the greatest, he does it to the best of his ability because he wants her to be proud of him.
Yeah. Yeah, and as, signs her name so she doesn't have to.
Right, when people have to be killed or whatever. And, yeah, so they're basically at the top in this district of you know, running the work camps, and when something happens and you have to pacify the Merg, and you go, oh, these 300 people did it, and you send them off to be shot. Oh, who knows, man, if they did, but you're making the Merg happy.
Yeah.
So it's pretty bad.
It is pretty bad. And she's called the Senator because they murdered all the other ones.
Yeah, they weren't as good as she was at spinning it.
Oh, boy.
And her goal is to run the Earth.
Yeah.
So she's kind of bad, but she's understandable, too. I mean, so anyway, then you see various other characters.
Mm-hmm.
There's Hayes, who's part of the police force, basically the kind of like, what's it, HSD, Health?
Yeah, no. Health and Safety Department.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which, because everything is done in euphemisms. You know, they're the secret police, basically.
Yeah, there's your double speak, really, right? Secret. Yeah, yeah, this is great. It didn't even occur to me, but I love it. It's so true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hiding behind the stuff, which is something that we do, you know, anyway. You know, 1984 really is true in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we just give it a new name and it loses its sting.
Well, and what's really interesting is I'm partway through reading Veritatis Splendor by the encyclical by John Paul II.
Yeah.
It's talking about that right now.
Is it really? Oh, cool.
Saying we look at things and that people these days will separate it from actual moral truth that is known by conscience and known by natural law, even if they don't believe in God. And they take it and say, and they separate it from those things so that they can say, you can decide your own truth.
Hmm.
And then they apply it to how they're living or how other people should live, but using the same language as the real truth.
Yeah.
And therefore we have double ways of thinking about things. I mean, the guy knows what he's talking about.
Yes, and he does. Talks about it beautifully.
But it was interesting, cool. Yeah, reading some of that at the same time as I was reading this, because the whole book is full of that stuff.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the whole point of the book is the Reconquest is the revolutionary group who's trying to take back the Earth, and they're not organized. They're just, you know, they're out there trying their best, but they're not good at it. And a plan gets set into motion by them that Ezra winds up in the middle of.
Right.
And so as we follow him and them, we see the other characters who we were already introduced to who are trying to find him or stop him or whatever.
I love it.
And and there's a larger plot that gets discovered with the Merg. So it's a really well-constructed story, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It pulls you right along. You understand everything. And as you said, Scott, it's funnier in the beginning, although there are amusing bits toward the end even that are slid in there.
Absolutely.
I think the author just can't help himself. Well, it's but good. It's yeah. everything else he's written has been, you know, this humorous fantasy, but this is real science fiction.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was really good. And I don't know about you, but it got the feel once this group was together, these freedom fighters, and they all come together and then they start their plan, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It started to feel to me like one of those World War II movies, you know, like Force 10 from Navarone or so, you know, where they get this weird or strange bedfellows together to go do something. And usually there's somebody that barely speaks English and there's, you know, a big guy and, you know, the bomb guy and the, you know, all this stuff. It kind of felt like that to me. It's like Steve McQueen in the middle of this or Harrison Ford at Force 10 from Navarone, something like that. That's the feel I got and I loved it. I love that feel.
You're absolutely right. It's there. I didn't really identify it. But I mean, even to the point of, you know, in we watched The Dirty Dozen, didn't we?
Talk like about the Dirty Dozen.
And so you've also got the, excuse the term, batshit crazy one, like Telly Savalas was.
Yeah,
who's barely holding it together so that they can get their revenge before they finally get to kill somebody. So I mean, you're right, because that is the scenario.
Yes,
they are fighting the big evil power, but the big evil power runs everything and no one has power.
Yes.
You know, so anyway, that's way far past probably what we needed to describe. But
sure.
Yeah. So, but Not the spoilers weren't too bad. So, yeah, you know.
I think it's good. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's an excellent audiobook. His stuff I always listen to it first. Yeah.
Yep.
I always listen to it first in audio, and then usually if I really like it, I'll get the Kindle version.
Oh, neat. Mm-hmm.
But this one, I actually wound up getting the print version.
Oh, that's great. Well, good.
Yeah.
It's a keeper. Because
I would.
It goes on the shelf.
It's a keeper.
In the pool room.
Yeah. As I've said, going in the pool room, and also I might like to lend it to people.
Oh, good.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I loved it. So off to spoiler territory we go. But yeah, you know, just sticking with that group kind of World War II movie kind of thing, you know, Iku was great.
Oh.
Because he was wise. He was very wise and experienced, you know. And then, what was the name of the Kumpal? Kumpal.
Yes.
Yes.
The bomb expert.
Right. The bomb expert. I loved. And it was her, I believe, right? I loved her. And I mean, she barely speaks English. You know, it was very painful.
No, she's
Thank
French.
You. We are friends. Yeah. French. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah, we're friends. And making bombs. And then they get together and make this crazy plan thanks to Ezra. Ezra's got the information. They're able to put something together, and this whole idea that only one queen can be on the planet at one time, so there's going to be some swap of these queens, or one's going to die and another one's going to come in, and they were wanting to take advantage of that moment, and
which was all supposition. Nobody knew. They were putting together the slightest clues, and it was interesting that the translator for the Merg, when he goes to see wherever the visitor is coming in Chicago, or Zero City as they call it, and the translator takes just the slightest chance to say, you know, you have a strong arm, which makes no sense, but when you're thinking about it and thinking about they know they have a moon base.
Yes.
Because the first group of people that kidnap him are actually, they don't have Iku and the other people. Those are international people who've come in to try and do something big to really affect the Merg. The smaller local group has, it's got Arkansas, as we said. It has somebody who's known as either Brushwoman or Sums, depending on where you are in the story. And it has, the big guy. And I thought I wrote his name down. There was Arkansas. There was the person who's either known as Brushwoman or Sums, depending on where we are in the book. And there's Rupture. And those are the three. There aren't four people, are there? It's just the three people.
Mm-hmm.
And they have come up with this plan to kidnap Ezra Barker. Because they want to get specific information from him about codes and things like that so they can do a big attack on this big explosion depot up north.
Yep.
And he is perfectly willing to tell them anything they want to know. Because he's no hero, as we've established. And he also... He is in love with Brushwoman because this was a very clever way that they got his attention. And he's, you know, a human being like everyone. He is an odd human being, but he is still capable of love. And he has love for this woman who he's seen only from afar. But she's kind of unlocked within him the capacity to wish he was better.
Mm.
So that there's one point when he is talking about, they're talking about the visitor, the senator and the Merg, and he's kind of writing notes to the senator. And they're kind of saying, do you have any advice for us? What else should we do to keep it secure? And he's making all these suggestions. And at one point he realizes he's wondering what this woman who he's fallen in love from watching her brush her hair across the street in her window, what she would want him to do.
Hmm.
And he realizes she would probably want him to go and see if he could find anything that would help them to kind of stop it or get an advantage. And so without realizing it, he realizes he's written it down to the senator and put it on a note, given it to him. Just like, yes, then Barker needs to come and look at it himself to make sure that he can see if there's anything else you need to check. And that's how he gets inserted into the story.
Mm-hmm.
But it's because he realizes he's thinking about what would she want me to do? So here's the impulse to a higher level of moral activity. I'm in love with this person. How would I make them happy?
Hmm.
What is it they would want me to do that would make them proud of me?
Yes.
What can I do for them? The sacrifice. And he's the character who actually, although it might not seem like it for a long time, he's actually having the changes, the character arcs, that make him into somebody who is still essentially himself. He knows he would betray them if he was back with the senator because he loves the senator, not in a emotional way, but just he wants to please her like a puppy, they say toward the end. So, but since he's with Sums, Brushwoman, the woman he loves, he just wants to help her. So when she keeps threatening to kill him, he's like, fine, but will you let me tell you what I think is happening with the queen?
Yes. Now can I say this? Now can I give you this thing? Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Right. Yep. I just want to please you. I just want to make you happy. And then later on, I was struck by this when I first read it, but reading it for us to talk about it, I was really hit by the part where he meets Iku, who also despises him because, you know, death to collaborators, of course. But Iku understands Barker also. And he knows he has to go through a visceral expression that is a confession of his shame and cowardice.
Yes, that was powerful.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it involved blood. It involved saying out loud what his sins were. It involved saying he was sorry and meaning it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It involved him becoming emotionally involved in realizing he knew what he'd done. Barker knew he'd betrayed all these people, but in really feeling it and experiencing it in a way that meant he was fully invested in his regret.
Mm.
And so when that happens, Iku then says, okay, now I'll never trust you, but we can work together because you understand what you have done and you understand why we want to change it, you know, how we're trying to change things.
Yeah.
And in fact, later on when he's talking to Sums and Sums hates him with a white hot passion. She just can't wait for the chance to kill him. They just keep needing information from him. And she says, oh, you think you cry and you say you're sorry and that's okay and you're forgiven? Hmm. And he genuinely says, then how are we forgiven?
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't tell him. She instead tells him why she's motivated the way she is.
Yeah, and I loved it. He made him write his name down in this on the ground. I mean, that's...
in his blood.
Yeah, I mean, it's reminiscent of a lot. But he said, confess your sins even. He used the words... Mm-hmm. Confess your sins. He said, relieve your conscience. You know, and then after that, it's like, I love how you said, we can work together now. It's like you're forgiven, but there are still consequences, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, I can't trust you, but we need to do this, you know? I can right. work with you. Yeah. So that was, it was really powerful moment there.
And it was powerful for Barker. I mean, Iku knew it would be.
Yes.
Obviously, he also had things he regretted.
Mm-hmm.
Because didn't he take Barker's blood and write Barker's name, and Barker took his blood and wrote Iku's name?
Right. Yep.
So he was kind of essentially going, we're kind of the same.
Mm-hmm.
Not exactly, but kind of.
Kind of, right.
And so this is the common, in the Catholic terms, you know, this is the original sin.
Mm-hmm.
And however they've expressed it. But what I was just thinking when I was talking about this is because then Sums is saying, oh, you think you're going to be forgiven?
Mm.
And she then tells her story, which is really interesting because she's done horrible things and wants to and enjoys doing horrible things, but only being married to a really good man who she was pretty sure she was in love with.
Mm-hmm.
Made her a good person. And she's like, now he's gone, and now actually I can be myself, and I enjoy hurting people. So she's the opposite of what Iku and Barker were going through in a way.
Yeah. Good point.
She's happy she can sin again.
Yeah. That's nice.
As we see at the end.
Right, right. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and now they're out here. She founded Reconquest. Reconquest, though. Yeah.
Well, there were all these groups that were all out trying to do stuff, and she was trying to do.
We found Reconquest, she says, right? Not found
it. Oh, right.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I meant to say.
Okay.
But yeah. Yeah, that's so powerful. I need to reread that. But yeah, I'm looking at it here. It's just great. But yeah, that was a powerful moment on the audio too, where,
oh yeah,
you know, cutting the arm and Barker's falling apart. You know, how do you get forgiven? He says, you know, and then you're right. Barker gives them everything they need. He's the piece that they need, and gives them all the information, everything they need.
Because he understands how everything's set up, and he understands. Most of all, he understands politics.
Yes.
Which I thought was so interesting. Because it was the skill of taking what's true and twisting it to your advantage always. And at one point toward the end, it's like Barker was lying a little, and he liked it because it felt like politics, and he was good at politics.
Yes. Yeah. And then Arkansas with this whole space thing, I really loved that. And you said earlier about how everything was uncertain. You know, they think that, you know, they think this is the right thing to do, or, you know, it's going to have the effect that they want. Is how I mean to say that.
Right.
They think it's going to, but they actually have no idea. And she's going to go into space in this thing. And at one point, Iku duct tapes her to the wall because there's no seat belts. it's like, you know, because she's on a Merg ship and they're going into space, and you know, that reminded me a little bit of Independence Day. It kind of harkened back to that movie, you know, where Jeff Goldblum's going into space with Will Smith. But you know, in a ship that they don't know anything about, but Arkansas is like, hey, we're doing it, you know, we're doing it. And I love, you know, Iku even at one point, he talked about, well, we need a backup plan because if we don't get the main goal, we ought to have a secondary goal because we need to make some kind of dent. And if we don't, won't that be a shame? And, you know, just the whole attitude of everybody was just, again, that reminds me of the World War II movies, too. You know, because people usually do this. They're thinking this is a mission I'm not going to return from. And that's certainly how Arkansas felt. But she was going to do it anyway. It was in a habit of doing that. She actually in a habit of assuming that she's going to not make it, you know, but she just keeps doing it. Keeps making it.
Well, it's funny because at one point early on, she tells somebody or she's thinking to herself, her set of rules that she has for herself, because she's a 19-year-old girl.
I've actually highlighted that. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Well, it just is the biggest Arkansas. The biggest reason it's chapter 10. The biggest reason Arkansas had yet to be killed in action was luck. The second biggest reason was that she appreciated the first, and then she starts going into these rules. Like number one is don't try not to die. That's what the Merg expect. You know, and then read the manual. A lot of Reconquest pilots come from the military. Arkansas came from vocational school and had multiple certificates in HVAC repair and installation. I just love it. I mean, you asked a little while ago, who do I identify with most? I would say it's Arkansas, even though she's a woman. I love her, you know. Don't do drugs is number three. A lot of people tried to wash away their misery with drugs. Arkansas also did this. Because the world was sorrow, and the right drugs helped you make it through the worst of it. But she was clean on flight day. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then don't make friends. It can be distracting if your buddy Robert blows up during a mission.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Don't question orders, not because the orders are good. Reconquest had never been a well-run organization. It wasn't even an organization. It was a collection of survivors. I just like her, you know. She's just the kind of character I just like a lot.
Well, yes, and
Let me say that I'd want to be as brave as she was.
Well, yes, I would like to be Arkansas. I have a feeling. Well, minus the part about knowing that you're a bad person. And you just want to hurt people. But I have a feeling it might be more like Sums, which would be very directed at my goal. Right. And if people have to go down to get to this goal, this is the only way it's going to happen because this is the right thing to do. Now, she is not that way because it's the right thing to do. This is how she's getting revenge on everybody for her husband. But at least I would be on the right side because I'm not the senator. Hayes is the opposite of some. So anyway, we can talk about that in a minute. Let me go back to the rules for a minute.
Yes.
Because at the end, she goes over her rules again. Mm-hmm. Right before what she does is that's so good. And I think it's the thing about not trying to not die is she just makes chaos happen. And she, watching them go in and get access to the moon, she is creating so much chaos just spur of the moment, thinking about Star Trek and stuff and using that as an example. And so she starts thinking about her rules and one, try not to die. Well, you know, that maybe that'll happen. Maybe it won't. Two, read the manual. And she had read it. So that was fine. And three, don't do drugs. And it says she was on drugs right now so much that she questioned whether or not she really was telepathically communicating with the alien queen in the trunk. You are. Thank you. That's the queen. Rule four, don't make friends. Well, she was literally crying because the Sri Lankan explosives expert had blown herself up. You know, that kind of thing. So she'd screwed the fourth rule. Rule five, don't question orders. Well, they were following the guesses of Barker, the worst traitor she'd ever shared a room with. So she'd been carrying doubts the whole time. And yet, look at her, following these orders, right? And then she came up with rule six. If there are no good ideas, go with a bad idea. And kind of the thing about Arkansas is she's really, when you meet her and she's thinking about what her life was like, she was so undirected. She was from a small town in, of course, Arkansas. And she was just going to vocational school, had a boyfriend, you know, doing all the things that you do. And it says, she says she might not have realized it, but it was the peak of human existence. And she's talking about things like life was pretty good. She worked at a burger place where she could eat fries for free on her break, and she loved fries. She still lived with her parents and had a 26-year-old boyfriend with a motorcycle who had a friend at the movie theater who'd sneak them in for free. She, like so many people pre-invasion, had a phone that gave her access to most of the assembled knowledge of humanity. When she wanted to get out of town and eat barbecue somewhere else, she could tap, tap, and get the opinions and ratings of hundreds and thousands of people on her options. And so it talks about all this stuff, and it's like, you know, we don't think of a simple everyday life as being so privileged. But Arkansas looks back and she realizes it was. And I love that the author stops and points this out. Our everyday lives are great. You use them how you use them.
Yes. She's, I do, not like using that. Them. You know, and that's such a common thing with all the apocalyptic stuff. You know, like The Stand, you know, where we read, you know, you take all this stuff away that we complain about. You know, we think we're in such dire straits. And then, well, this is dire straits. You know what I mean? And we do need to remind ourselves about that. You know, it's like we're living in a time in the world or in history where we've got so much more than everybody that came before us. Yet we walk around complaining, you know.
And it can overwhelm you. Yep.
So.
Well, I was thinking, too, the way the book is structured is interesting because we've got a lot of contrasting and comparing. So you're seeing how people on both sides are exactly the same. And there are a few who are different. As you said, you know, Arkansas is different. Barker is different, really. But Hayes is a real true believer. And we haven't talked about him.
He's out there. And it's interesting that the book, you know, we're not spending a heck of a lot of time with the Merg. People that are collaborating with the Merg and people that are trying to be part of this reconquest. And we're not learning a lot about the aliens, as you know, there's not like an alien with a name that's with these people at all ever.
Right.
You know, they're just there, and the humans have taken sides.
Yeah, not like the mode in God's Eye.
Right.
Where there are some that you find very sympathetic.
Mm-hmm.
You're right.
Yeah, so that's an interesting thing. And then, but I like what you're saying about Hayes. Hayes is just in there. I mean, he's just he like, believes this everything. Is the thing. Yeah, yep. And that's a real contrast with both the senator and Barker. Because they're... It's not the same, you know. Hayes is just like all in, and Barker at least has some good in him, where he's like feels guilty about things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're surviving, is I guess what they're doing, and the senator is just happy to be the ruler of the world for a minute, which she actually comments on.
Yeah,
she says, "I've been." Yeah, it's just funny how some things are put, but. But yeah, she's a ruler for a minute, and
yeah. I'd forgotten the thing where she says, "Oh my gosh, Barker's gone. She has this new assistant who can't do any of the stuff she needs to have done, which is basically her job." And she's like, "And I can't remember." She was thinking about it, and she was going, but she knew one thing. By the time the night ended, she was going to have burned the office down. It's like she uses that to say, oh my gosh, we're supporting the MRG and they're attacking us. And every time someone says, but it's your own home district, she goes, that's how far they got. I mean, she could really spin it. But the real reason she's burning the office down is that huge stack of tasks to do on her desk that she doesn't know how to do. That's why she's burning the office down. It's like... Okay. She knows exactly what's going on. She just can double think herself into and out of anything.
Yeah.
And so, so you have Hayes, who's a true believer because he hated the chaos that existed in the world as a cop before the MRG landed. And he's like, now people are having to work a real day's job. Now these are like Auschwitz style camps, but okay. And his counterpart, of course, is Sum, who's also a true believer, just directed the other direction. But she's not going to stop and think about anything else except this is the right way to do stuff. You have the senator, who's the opportunist and smart, and she also is a survivor. You have Barker, who's in a similar way, although expressed as, you know, a cowardly, weak person. He's also an opportunist and smart. And a survivor, which is what Iku says. He goes, what are you? You're not a sinner. You're not a this. You're not a that. You're not a loser. You're not a winner. You're not good. You're not bad. You're a survivor. The senator realizes that just from small clues that Barker isn't dead when they have got a fake dead body to show her so everybody will quit asking about him for other reasons. And she realizes based on his clothing and everything, she says, I think, hold on, Hayes is telling her, I think Barker has reached the end of his usefulness to them then. Meaning, he's telling the senator he thinks Barker's dead. Hayes made a serious face, like he was trying to break something gently to the senator, but she refused to accept his hint. Barker's not dead. You could tie an anchor to that man and sink him to the bottom of the ocean, and later you'd find him as an advisor for Poseidon. The man is useful. If nothing else, he is always useful. And that's what scares me. So,
that's great.
She's like, I love Barker because I've had him around so long, but he's dangerous. And here's why, to what we were trying to do.
Yeah.
So, but that's they're cool. Both, Senator and Barker are kind of like counterparts with different personalities of survivors because she's doing the same thing. She is surviving and coming out on top time after time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Patterson and Rupture, who are both on other sides. One's a cop, one's just a regular Reconquest guy. They're just regular guys. They're just going along, Patterson's actually trying to make sense of stuff like a real cop would, and Hayes keeps stopping him and correcting him on, no, here's how the system really works.
Mm-hmm.
We have to do it like this. And Rupture is just, you know, oh, you need me to drive the truck? I'll drive the truck, you know.
Yeah,
he's just a regular guy. He'd like laugh back the way it used to be. So.
Yep. Yeah, I love it. I just love that group of people. It's just neat. It's really cool. to just bring all these, you know, that's a lot of people to bring in. And then the action scenes when this stuff is going down is so good. I was riveted, you know. Mm-hmm. They're zipping along. They were in space and something was going on the Earth, flipping between those scenes. And it was good. Super effective.
Oh, yeah, with everybody gathering for the with all the Merg gathering in Chicago and people are being bused there. There's a submarine that's going, kind of a submarine, that's going close to drop off people. And then at the same time, you've got Arkansas convincing the Merg that there's invisible attackers around her and stuff.
Yeah, oh, it's just fun. It's funny because, you know, we're in a spaceship and we're in a submarine. And, you know, it's just almost ridiculous, but just so fun. Just
in the same really enclosed environment in an alien atmosphere.
Yeah.
Outside, that's kind of.
And they didn't even know if there would be air where they were headed. Do they breathe oxygen? We don't even know. We're going. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they actually calculated how much oxygen they had. Iku did it. I have no idea how he would have. But Iku did it. It said, "Yeah, we're going to be fine."
Yeah, let's
enough.
Go.
It's a good. It's sure. It's a can. We got enough. That's too fun. Yeah. Oh, just fun. Just fun. And really, I mean, the characters were just great, and I love that contrast between the three collaborators, and again, the poignant moment of Barker's confession, like you said.
Oh, yeah.
All of that stuff together is just a terrific book. Really, really good. So I definitely need to try something else by him. But
he's wonderful at writing those action scenes where everything's going back and forth and back and forth and the stakes are getting higher and higher and higher. Definitely try Andrea Vernon. Although Dragon Heist is good, but the first Andrea Vernon, well, all three of them are good. But
okay.
He's just a master at doing that. And I would say one of the other things I liked was the end of the book where Arkansas can see that Sam is going to point up being the general of the earth and ruthless in punishing enemies and this stuff. And she smuggles out Barker just to go off and hit that faster than light button and see where they wind up. And Barker says, "But what if we wind up somewhere and it's awful and there's aliens and all this stuff?" And she goes, "But what if we wind up somewhere where the aliens are really cool and we have a really great time?"
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. You know, what are you going to do? That's her attitude. Yeah.
Oh, that's too fun. Yep.
And that's the attitude going forward of, you know, Sums is still trying to control everything and she's enjoying taking vengeance and everything. But Arkansas is like, "But I want life to be kind of like it used to be. It was fun. It was exciting. You know, I enjoyed myself."
Yeah. Yeah. Good deal. Yeah. Arkansas flying the ship at the end. Yeah. Really good.
Oh, I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, I really did. I enjoyed the heck out of it. So I hope, well, I guess I don't know that it needs to be, but it would be a great movie. This is made and ready.
You're right, it would be.
Yeah, and it's already kind of structured that way. You know, with the scenes, again, like between the two action things that are going on, you know, keep flipping back and forth. That's very cinematic. And
all the different characters that we see what they're doing earlier on when they're, you know, investigating what happened to Barker and, you know, what is it that the Merg are really up to? And everybody, you're right. I didn't think about the fact that he's moving us back and forth so much. Well, that's how he's building the story while it still is maintaining interest in the characters.
Yeah, I was just curious. I just typed a search just to see if it says anything about movie rights. There's actually a movie called Scum of the Earth from 1974.
I think there's some other books called that, too, that I came across when I was doing a quick search today for this one.
Well, cool. It'd be neat. Hopefully they do it.
Yeah, like I say, his books are all worth reading just for light entertainment.
Yeah, you would go with Andrea... What did you call it? Andrea Vernon next?
Andrea Vernon.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely do those.
And that's,
I mean,
yeah.
Bonnie Turpin is a world-class reader. I mean, she's just amazing. And all of his books, the audio is really good for them.
Cool.
So.
And it's an exclusive, you said. Andrew Vernon and the Corporation for Ultra Human Protection is the first one.
Yes.
There it is. Okay. Very good.
Yeah.
And it exists only on Audible. Is it even a hard... It is a
Kindle book, okay. And I think it's now available as a paperback. And I think all of hers are, or his are, I'm sorry. Hmm. But for a long time, I would have to look at when they came out. But, I mean, I would look every so often for the Kindle one, like I say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes you need that fun reading for stressful moments, and you can't listen to the audio.
Yes, yeah.
So I was really happy when they came out. And I don't think they cost a lot.
Yeah, it looks like $6, $6.40.
Yeah, yeah. Yep,
very good.
So, yeah.
Wow.
Easy.
Yep, awesome. Well, thank you.
No, you're very welcome.
I really loved it, so that's great.
Yeah, I was telling somebody about it, and I said it's like John Scalzi, but I think it's better than John Scalzi.
Yeah, yeah.
I you know, John mm-hmm. Scalzi, I really liked Agents of the Stars, which we read a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I've tried a few of his other books, and they just never really worked for me.
Interesting. Did you read Old Man's War, the first one?
Yeah.
Didn't like it very much? I liked that one quite a bit.
It was okay.
Yeah, I liked it and then didn't read past it. So I didn't like it so much that I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah,
but I liked it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess thinking back, I did like it, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. It didn't grab me the way Agent of the Stars did.
Yeah.
And maybe it says something about who I am that I like all of Alexander Kane's books, except I didn't listen to the second one of Orlando People. That series I didn't like quite as much, but, you know.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with it. It just didn't grab me as much. But still good.
Very good.
Yep.
Well, excellent.
Okay.
So it looks like next up for us, we're going back to India, I'm pretty sure here.
Oh.
Is it Lage Raho Munabai?
Munabai. Yes. This one poses an interesting question, I think. What would Gandhi do? That's the theme through the whole thing.
Really? Oh, that's fun.
Mm-hmm. And it's a rom-com. It's really a masala where they just throw everything in there.
Oh, cool.
So it's a little crazy.
Okay.
But you can handle it, Scott. Crazy. I know you can handle it.
All right. I'm in.
Yeah. Okay.
That'll be fun. Well, cool.
Okay. I hope so. All right.
Well, thanks again for this book.
Oh, I'm so glad you liked it, and I enjoyed rereading it myself. So.
Good, good, good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, take care, everyone.
Yeah, we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.